And everybody can hear me. I'm not cutting out when somebody else say something over me right now.
You can hear me right now and I can still hear you.
Perfect.
You hear both of us, Jen.
Nice. I'm so happy. I had so many clever things I got cut out last time. Oh, well.
But like you, I can't see your face though, because your microphone's right in front of your fucking face.
There's nothing to see. You know what I look like.
I feel like I'm flying a plane or something.
Jen has her new microphone. Jen, talk. Let me see if you sound like you're underwater.
Do I sound like I'm underwater?
No, but you still sound a little bit like a robot. It's your nice, unstable internet connection.
Well, I'm sitting in the kitchen. Better not. It's fucking right here. Right
okay. Oh, then we're...
My kitchen says... No
idea what you just said.
Oh my God!
It's frozen too. You look like your hands just like here going.
Yeah, you're like C-3PO or something. I don't know. You're like R2-D2. That's what you sound like. I heard that unstable internet signals are a reflection of the people who are using them.
Yep, I'm pretty unstable these days.
There you go.
Whatever.
Sounds better now. Okay. Unstable. We're all unstable.
No kidding.
Can't help it. It's terrible. All right. All right. Let's get started here, you guys. Okay, here we go. Welcome. Welcome to episode 008, Going Back to School Safely. It's Anne here as usual with my cohorts. They are. Introduce yourselves, ladies.
Jen, same Jen. Jen, just Jen.
Sharon.
Oh, Sharon's a robot now. Try that again, Sharon.
Oh, God. And Sharon, the robot.
She's not
a robot. So internet's going to be a pain in the ass today for everybody.
Sharon.
Oh, wow. You can see we're all a little punchy because we're kind of all worried about what the future holds, you know? So today we're going to be talking first of all, we're going to start off with our newsworthy tidbits, mostly talking about the current budget that was finally approved by the state of California and what's in that for education and how that might affect us. And then we're going to get into the idea of getting back to work, whether that be in a classroom or direct from our living rooms. So in any case, so let's talk about that budget thing, first of all.
The thing
that is so hard to understand. I don't understand how any document ever makes its way through the legislature because it's not written in any language. It's like a foreign language that most human beings can't read. So I think it's actually some deviant secret language that people don't know.
Written in code.
Yeah, but like, aren't our legislators supposed to be like normal, ordinary people? They don't like have extra degrees in legalese or anything, do they?
No, they're all mostly lawyers. So it's kind of written in lawyerese, I think.
Yeah.
But anyway, one of the things that I was, when I first started researching about this and trying to understand it more, I wanted to know like where the education funding came from. And the majority of our education comes from the state, California Public Schools. We get a total of $97.2 billion in funding, and it comes usually from three sources. And this is from these statistics come from the 18-19 school year. So, but the three sources generally are the state, which would be like your state taxes that you pay.
Yeah, now California, most of the funding is from the sales tax. No, income tax, that's what it was.
Right.
It was income tax.
And so the state provides 58% of that from taxes. And then your property taxes and other local sources take up another 32% of that. And then we get some assistance from the federal government, about 9%. So those are the three major funding sources for the state of California. And
what about our registration, man?
All of that's the state. That goes into the state. All those we are in California, we pay so many different taxes, all the gas tax and all that stuff. That's all supposed to go to transportation. All that money that you pay in gasoline goes to supposedly to fund transportation infrastructure, that kind of stuff. But
we have amazing roads. Like, yeah. When was the last time you drove on a road with massive potholes?
Campus Avenue. Campus Avenue in Upland. That's massive potholes.
And how long has it been that way, and how long will it be that way?
Well, they filled in the potholes.
And, they fill them in. It's like Californians love their roads because we love our cars.
Right.
And that's like, that's the priority. The schools aren't the priority.
I was just going to say, we don't love our schools.
Yeah, because if you look at, like, I remember when we were in New Jersey, man, you did not drive down a road without a pothole.
Yeah. I think the weather has a lot to do with that.
Yes, but the schools are more important.
Should be. But, you know, so let's talk about, that's what funding, those for the three sources, the state property taxes and your other local sources, and then federal government pitches in a teeny bit. But we have in California, we're serving about 6.2 million kindergarten through 12th graders in California. And 9 out of 10 of those students attend one of nearly 9,000 regular schools. And we've got about 1,026 school districts. 11% of the students attend about 1,222 different charter schools, which sometimes it kind of bothers me, which are publicly funded, but they are not subject to state regulation. They kind of get to do their own thing.
They do whatever they want.
Some of it is kind of questionable, I think.
And private schools get some funding too.
Do they? I didn't think they did. And that was part of the reason they wanted to do vouchers. So that,
then how do you explain, like, the, I heard these guys talking on that All of the Above show, and they were talking about the conversion therapy at one of the schools. And
that was a charter school.
That
was a charter school, not a private school.
Well, that happened. Okay, the charter school. Okay.
Yeah.
And that, remember that happened to our friend's daughter?
Really? I don't remember that. Your friend?
That lunchtime conversation. It's a friend of a friend that we work with. And it's a local school, same thing.
Yeah, so, and then more than half of public school students are economically disadvantaged in California, and about one quarter are English language learners, which makes sense to me because we have, you know, we're so close to the border and people come over here. But the part that shocked me was that more than half of our public school students are economically disadvantaged in one of the richest states in the United States. How is that possible?
Because more than half of our population lives below the poverty line, because California sucks for that. We got four families together, one family house.
What was that? Somebody was like totally roboting.
Say that again, R2-D2.
I said that's why there's so many like one family, single family homes with three or four families living in them.
Why is that though?
Afford housing. You can't afford housing, and they don't pay anybody anything. Nobody pays anybody.
But then somebody must be getting, if we're one of the richest economies in the state, I think we're the fifth largest economy in the United States, I think. Why do we have so many that are economically disadvantaged? It doesn't make sense. So we're doing something that's kind of screwy. In any case.
Well, cost of living is constantly going up, and a lot of people, their jobs don't compensate for that. I think that has a lot to do with it.
Right.
We also have like some super enormously very wealthy people that live in our state that hold a huge amount of income and
movie
wealth.
Stars,
mm-hmm.
athletes,
mm-hmm.
people that own large companies. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't know. I don't get it. Anyways, that was just a puzzlement to me that we have so many of our kids are disadvantaged. It's crazy.
Mm-hmm. It has to do with the same fact that, you know, the workers' wage has gone up just slightly and the CEO's wages have gone up. Whee! like going backwards on a roller coaster.
Oh God, I don't know.
Doing the climb before you do the drop.
Something we have to figure. I don't know. You would think that I know people are working on it or trying to work on it, but it's a tough, tough situation, I think. But anyway, so let's talk about how this money became to get distributed, the history of funding, which just for a quick review for every people out there who may not remember, but before 1971, the majority of school funding came from property taxes. And of course, if you lived in a rich area, you had nicer schools. And if you lived in a poor area, you had worse schools. So in 1971, the California Supreme Court said, that is unconstitutional. You guys there in the state capital need to figure out a way to make that more equitable. So then came along 1978 Prop 13. I remember when that passed and how many programs were cut from schools at that time because they reduced property taxes, and that was the major source of school funding. And now that caused the shift to be the burden of the money to be on the state, that those other taxes and everything had to come into the state, and the state became the major source of funding instead of property tax. And that was the year they got rid of driver's ed in the high schools.
Driver's ed.
Yeah. I'm sure there were a lot of teachers that were PTSD because they had to teach that. Then another thing that happened was in 1988, Proposition 98 passed. And that is where the state was now required to dedicate 40% of its general fund to K-14 education each year. And that's where we've been having trouble because sometimes they rob Peter to pay Paul out of that. I think where they like go put a temporary hold and borrow from that, and then hopefully they try to pay it back. But I don't think that's always happened. So currently the state has a new funding formula that gives priorities to high need students. So in 2013, California implemented what's called the local control funding formula, which basically gives extra funding to these high need kids who are like economically disadvantaged English learners or foster youth kind of students. And I started thinking, well, maybe that's why districts are so, you know, anxious to have those kids there. You know, they used to be sent away, right? They used to have special schools for kids. And then they're now all incorporated together. But this local control funding formula gives a base amount that's keyed to every school's average daily attendance. Hence the reason districts are so anal, because that's how they get their money. And then if you've got a lot of high need students, you get an extra 20%.
So like we should run the numbers and see what
one.
Yeah, exactly. Right. And see what those funds are for our district. Because, come on, if that's our school, is all whatever percent we are, we're Title I school, so our percent is high. What do we have, 80-some percent of kids on free and reduced lunch?
Something like that.
So, I mean, if we have such an enormous, huge population and there's this extra money, why can't we lower class sizes? Why can't we use that for staff? I bet it's not enough. I bet it's not enough to cover salaries.
No, because I think that has to do with the fact that the funding has increased, but it's not increasing at the same amount as like cost of living and everything else that goes with it. You know, they said that California per pupil funding has increased like 23% since the great quote unquote recession, but that we're still lower than the national average. It's actually gotten closer. So right now, per pupil spending in California is $12,143 per student. I think the lowest one is Utah. They spend like, I think it's either $6,000 or $8,000 per student. But when you get over to like Vermont and New York, their spending is way above what California spends. They're spending $20,000 in Vermont and 19, thousand and some change in New York City. And I know they have really high property taxes there, but.
Oh yeah. But it goes New York and New Jersey property taxes are insane.
You know, I guess that's what, you know, you have to think about is how do we want to fund our schools? You know, are we going to, is it worth paying more taxes? Every time they do that, everybody promises, oh, education's going to benefit from this, right? They take out bonds and all this other stuff. And then people get, they feel like they're not getting the bang for their buck, I think. Anyway. So district costs are rising faster than the state funding is, obviously. And one of the problems is, unfortunately, the pensions for PERS and STRS. There's so much money that the districts have to contribute to them that it interferes with the way they can fund education itself. So, for example, in 2013, the districts paid about 8% of their teacher payrolls towards pensions. And this year, it rose to about 19%. So it's about $1 billion more. It'll be about $1 billion more over the next 3 years. So that's a crazy amount of money.
Yeah, but I want to say I'm totally against getting rid of that, because good God, like, what perk do you have as a teacher? You know, I mean, understand that other corporations don't do pensions anymore, but maybe they should. We should go back to that. I don't know.
Well, nobody saves.
Well, right. Because they went from, oh, well, we're going to like kind of save and you can match and save, right, for you. And I go, oh, you know, it's totally up to you how you invest. It's totally up to you how you do your 401k and all that stuff. And nobody does it. Well, some people do, but not enough people do it. And then you've got a strain when they're older and the burdens of everybody else. But I want to go back to the whole idea of making it more equitable with the Prop 13, right? Or so that your funding is coming from the state and instead of from your local property taxes. It's not making it equitable because you still have like, I live in a fairly affluent community, right? And we've got a huge community grassroots kind of educational program that does fundraising and events for the school. And they donate enough money to pay teachers' salaries at schools. You know, so that they pay for another teacher, for an art teacher, they pay for the music teacher, they pay for those things. And that's not coming out of the school's budget. So it's coming out of the community group thing. And what I remember going into kindergarten, right, and getting the list, here's how much money we want from you.
Yeah, here's the list of all the things you need to be to provide.
Here's a list of all the money we want from you so your kid can have an enriching school experience, and we can do these field trips and we can do these activities and we need this much for supplies and blah, blah, blah. And everybody's out there writing a check, right? But that doesn't happen at our school because you're not going to get it.
But when you're talking about just relying on state funding, that's where that comes in. Yeah, if you live in a wealthy community, of course you're going to have access to more things because you have parents who have, you know, excess cash that they are willing to contribute to things like that. So the equitableness.
I'm not sure people realize that though. I don't know that people realize that that's what's happening. You know, I mean, I don't know. I was talking with my dad about this the other day and he's like, well, you know, what do you mean? All kids can go on a field trip. I'm like, no. Like my kids went on way more field trips than our students do. Even when our district had money, like remember 25 years ago, it was, you could plan a field trip. You could take a kid on a field trip. You know, you could do all these things. And now it doesn't seem that we have any funds to do that, but
they still do in other places. I think other things that have changed too is the incorporation. There's way more special ed kids now.
Well, that's because our district works well with special ed kids and a lot of them come to us.
Yeah, but that also puts a strain on the budget, right?
It does,
You can't keep up with that through your district budget. And plus the fact that we don't have as many students in our district anymore, the enrollment's declining. So that ADA is dropping. Mm-hmm. So there's just a lot of things that are happening. Plus the fact that teachers want more money. Yes, we do.
Mm-hmm. Well, we want to keep up with cost of living too. We haven't been able to do that.
I know.
Yeah.
It's just, it just seems like it's a really poorly, it's just a really poorly organized, seems like, way of doing things.
So are we just going to just start all over and everybody for themselves, go get your own education?
Well, it'd be like the old days. You sit around the campfire and the elder tells you about the history and what mushrooms not to eat and how to kill a buffalo.
Or which ones to eat.
Oh, my God. All right, let's talk now about what got passed in the California state budget, according to a summary in an article that is called California Legislature Approved State Budget and the highlights from that. It says that $14 billion in additional congressional coronavirus relief was approved to avert the cuts to early and higher education. They also included state funding for K-12 schools. They said will stay the same as it was last year. But we're going to have to wait a year to be repaid for $11 billion of that in funding. They also approved the final balanced budget. Of course, it was approved along party lines with the Republicans criticizing our reliance on borrowing. They don't like that. They tend to be more, quote unquote, fiscally responsible. So the idea that we're borrowing a lot of money and that we're dipping into the California state's rainy day fund is not a particularly positive thing in their eyes. So they
okay. Wait a second. Like,
pardon me.
Wait a second. How more rainy of a day can you get?
Well, you know, I'm sure
this is pretty much a major crisis, and you don't want to use your rainy day fund. Isn't that what it's for?
You would think. You would think. Proposition 98 funding was $81 million last year, and this year they're going to drop it. They're going to, like I said, remember I told you, they're going to drop it to $70 billion for this coming school year. And remember that $11 billion I told you we're going to have to wait for? That is going to be in deferrals, which is like money that they set aside, but they don't actually give it to you. So, the reason why is they're waiting to see if the Senate is going to pass the HEROES Act, which will give states a substantial amount of money towards education. It's about $14 billion that will help out in California.
And some things are going to be reversed.
Well, the cuts will be reversed if the HEROES Act comes through. But I wouldn't count on that for a long time because it was created and passed in the House. It's now kind of what I would call stalled in the Senate. They're waiting for the Senate to review it. This always boggles my mind. The HEROES Act has 1,800 pages, and it's not just education stuff. It's a whole slew of all kinds of things. And I'm sure that the Republican-controlled Senate is going to want to make a lot of cuts in there that the Democratic House passed. So we're going to have to wait and see how that goes. So we did get $6.3 billion from the CARES Act, which was the first federal program that went out, and a lot of people got little checks in the mail from them already. That was passed, but they have to spend all of that money by December 31st. Any money that they got has to be spent by them. And it looks to me like what they did is the districts got schools are getting $2.9 billion to cover loss of learning.
Now, what does that look like?
Well, this goes to low-income students, English learners, foster unit youth, and homeless kids, yeah. Those high-need kids. They set aside $2 billion for districts to work on them.
Yeah, but so every time I've asked our district, like anybody I've asked about this money, nobody knows anything about it. Nobody knows what we got. Nobody knows how it's being used. Nobody knows. Nobody knows anything about it. And I'm like, it's been a while. We should, did you have to apply for it? Did someone not apply for it? Because that would be really stupid.
Yeah, you did have to apply for it.
Yeah.
They did. I'm sure there was paperwork.
Yeah, I'm sure there was. And with our transition.
And nobody knew about it.
Yeah, with our transition in people, I'm wondering if that got lost in the shuffle, and that would be a horrible mistake. But everybody I've asked,
I have no idea where that might come from. Because so we have those, our high need kids are getting, the state of California is giving out $2.9 billion to those high need kids, but they're also giving out $1.5 billion to districts who have special ed students, special education students for the same purpose.
And Title I, too, which were all those.
I don't know. I'm just telling you what I read.
Yeah, I know, but what I'm saying is we're
don't
all
shoot
of
the messenger.
We're all of those. Like, I don't know. Have you guys asked anybody?
I don't know. I don't know those people.
No, nobody's going to have those answers.
And if they do, I don't know that they tell us. Anyway, I bet it's like around the school board must know. You would think they would get information on that. Besides those, the $2.9 billion and the $1.5 billion, there's $6.3. So the $2.9, the $1.5 is coming out of that $6.3 from the CARES Act that was already given out, supposedly. And districts get another $1.4 billion that was based on a Title I formula.
Title I.
So yeah, so there's Title I kids get it. Special ed kids get it.
Well, the kids don't get it. The districts get it that serve the kids.
Yes. Yeah. Well, yeah. Wouldn't that be nice? Can you imagine getting a check in the mail from the, oh, I have a special needs kid. I get a, Then the leftover, $980 million will go to districts, based on that local control funding formula. And then, so that's that $6.3 billion that takes care of that $6.3 billion that came through the CARES Act. In addition to all that, they are putting $2.3 billion in funding to our pensions to help relieve that problem that's going over there for the next 2 years. I'll contribute to that. $645 million more is going to go in addition to special education. And then $100 million is proposed cuts for after-school programs that are critical for low-income families, unfortunately. So they are going to try to restore those programs, those after-school programs, with the $100 million. Then they're guaranteeing our per-student funding through the rate for this year. So they're not going to increase that, but they're going to keep it as same as it was last year for our ADA. But in order to get that money, this is what they have to do. Districts have to offer a full year of instruction. They have to have 180 days of instruction. And they have to document daily student participation. We have to communicate with parents for students who are not participating a minimum of 3 days per week.
That's what we started doing at the end of last year.
Right. We did that all last year.
And I'm sure that was because of this, because they wanted this CARES Act money, right? And then they also have to...
Is this the CARES Act, or is this going to be for the HEROES Act?
This is in order to get this is the money that came from the budget this year. So,
okay, this is this year, okay.
In order for the districts to get that $6.3 million, that and the other kind, and the other money that's being provided, they have to do these things. And then the other one I thought was interesting, in order to get this, if it's permitted by the local health agencies, we must provide some form of in-school instruction. Okay. Yes.
Let's just politicize everything, even your health.
Right? Yeah, that's part of what they all said there. Yeah.
So, of course, you know, what does that do? That puts pressure on the health agencies, and they are going to say that you have to go back.
Well, I think that's already in the works. I think that we're going to have to, I think they're going to be pushing that as one of the options. So, and then they also came up with what they're going to require distance learning to look like for funding. So all students have to have a computer and internet. We have to have standards aligned content and instruction. We have to have live interaction with students. We have to maintain regular communication with parents, and we have to have procedures to make sure that we re-engage students who are absent for more than 60% of instruction per week. That's all has to be done. We have to provide academic support for our English learners and our disability students. So that's what our budget's going to look like. I know that we're supposed to be making budget cuts in our school districts because what's been approved is not going to cut it. I think the governor asked all school districts to cut 10%. And I know Newsom pledged that if everybody has to take a 10% budget cut, that he himself and all of the state employees would also take a 10% budget cut. That's what he said. So,
10%.
Yeah. So I'm just a little confused about, you're going to get the same funding, right?
Right.
So I'm guessing that per pupil funding, because right. So right. So mm-hmm. now, I mean, realistically, we're going to lose a lot of students. You know, we're going to lose them. They're not going to come back for, you know, parents are going to be like, oh, this was easy. I'm going to homeschool them. Or, wow, you know, I'm going to put my kid in an online school. They did fine. You know, maybe not realizing that it's going to be very different because that was emergency teaching. And now we're like, okay, and now we have to do some quote unquote.
We have to really teach.
Regular. Yeah, we have to do some quote unquote regular teaching, right?
I think that's why the district is also going to be offering a distance learning plan in order to keep mm-hmm. students at part of our district instead of going, you know, they're going to have to do something like that.
I think they're all, from what I've heard around our districts, they're the ones that we are around here, they're all planning on doing that. Because there's too many families that are like, yeah, no, not happening.
And I think a lot of parents are just ready. They need to go back to work. So they're going to send their kids. They need to send their kids somewhere.
Right.
And unfortunately, we're kind of like that glorified babysitting service. Mm-hmm. And our economy, in a lot of ways, depends on kids going back to school so parents can go back to work. So anyway, I don't know. It looks like a mess to me. It sounds like a lot of money. But and at the same time, it doesn't sound like enough. I don't think it's ever enough. So, all right. Anything else you want to add to that? Mess?
It's a mess.
It is.
It's a mess.
Mess. Big, okay. Then.
Big mess.
Okay. So let's take a break. Yeah, let's take a break and go on to, let's take a break here and go into mess number two. How to go back to school safely.
Move on from this mess to the next mess.
Not.
Mess number two.
Yeah, not. All right. Welcome back after that lovely break. Hopefully you've like had a shot of tequila or something to calm your nerves after.
No kidding.
All of that. But you're gonna need another one. You're gonna need some more in a minute, because take a look at these current COVID,
making your head spin.
Right? Take a look at these current COVID cases in the United States. You know, they're talking about wanting us to go back to school in August, right? The end of August?
August.
And I don't know if you've heard the news lately, but in California, at least, we're one of those hot spots where cases are now on the rise, and a lot on the rise, where I know Newsom yesterday was on talking about closing up bars again. And
yeah, they got closed.
They're done. Yeah, they're closed again.
Right? So if you look at this...
Yeah, we're closed. Because if I'm in LA County, we were closed first.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I'm looking at the... if you go to current COVID cases in the United States, if you Google that, you get these nice charts that you can like change all the mm-hmm. you know, the information on. But the new cases in California as of June 29th was 6,367 new cases since the 29th.
Yeah, that was 2-3 days ago.
So it's probably, could be more than that now, but that was the latest one they had. And if you notice, that it was low and now it's just climbing. The curve is going up. It's not going the right way. Mm-hmm. So how is that, how are we possibly going to be safe to go back to school in what, six?
In a month.
Yeah, in a month.
And a half.
A month and a half.
Yeah.
I don't understand that. And look at the United States. The United States itself had 52,609 new cases as of July 1st. And if you can see again, the curve was going down and mm-hmm. now it's back up. So
Well, and we're talking about, you know, all these, you know, budget cuts and blah, blah, blah. But how much more expensive is it going to be to open school with all the new safety precautions and just the sanitation, you know, every day throughout the day? That's going to be really expensive.
Well, they're supposed to be putting in touch-free sinks and touch-free soap dispensers and touch-free paper towel dispensers and hand washing stations and sanitizing stations all over the school, not to mention...
That's great. How many of those kids are going to actually use those?
Well, I don't know. Maybe there will be the fear of God will be put into them, and they will. A fear of COVID. The new COVID God. The God of COVid. I don't know. It's pretty...
Well, they have those portable ones. Remember, we've been to conferences before where they bring out the sink and they just, you know, roll it out there. And
it's like a little kiosk, yeah.
And it's got everything there.
But you have to have a place to attach it to water.
Well, there's water fountains. Like outside my room, there is. On the other side of the building, there is.
Yeah, there's one outside my room, too.
Well, I guess they're going to have to use those because they're not allowed to drink out of them anyway. So, I don't know. I don't understand how all that expense is going to be covered, but there was a really good article about what needs to change inside schools, and they had really awesome infographics that broke it down really well, and it broke it down to school buildings on the outsides, what they need to do on the inside of the buildings, and it's so crazy expensive, and this infographic talks about for a school to open, it says it's going to cost $1,778,139. And that was for a school district with, I think, what was it? Eight schools?
Yeah, a small district. Was, yeah.
Eight schools and like 700 students or something. So I can't even imagine what it's going to cost, what would cost our district. Because we're a unified K-12. So
yeah,
we have what, 4,000 students at the high school.
Yeah,
I don't know. That part just doesn't seem like it's gonna work too well to go back with that. I don't know. What are you guys thinking about that?
There's no. Let me be blunt. There's no fucking way.
Yeah, there's no way.
There's no way. Like, oh, you're gonna make it one way on our, like, we have stairs that are one way in two parts of campus. Do the kids follow those directions? No.
No.
They don't.
There's just so many.
Well, you know, and these kids required to wear a mask, man. Like, I think I said it before, those masks are going to turn into like little slingshots, you know? Yeah.
You know, what's really interesting though is I was looking at the Department of Education made recommendations for what's acceptable for going back to school. And, you know, this is what they say that they have to have in order to open a campus, right? First of all, the county and state have to lift stay-at-home orders, and COVID testing has to be available to employees on a regular basis. So you can imagine, it's like going in a war zone, right? We're going to have to get tested a lot, you know, because...
And those tests are super uncomfortable, you guys.
Yeah.
Well, yeah.
But I took my kid and they did swab, inside, like gagging down the throat and then up the nose twice, up the nose, man. Yeah, nasty.
Here's the other thing, though.
Nasty.
The other thing, and this is interesting, there has to be a decline in confirmed cases. Well, we just talked about the fact that there is not a decline right now. There is an increase.
No.
So our local hospitals have to have surge capacity. And we have to have protective equipment available for everybody on staff and all the students with special, you know, we have some students that need diapering and things like that. And how are you going to deal with that? They have to purchase multiple thermal scan thermometers.
PPE.
The district's going to have to provide that. That's how much money is that? And that has to be
a lot of money. Yeah, that's what I was saying. It's be expensive.
Well, masks, yeah, but they're going to get disposable stuff. And how good is that for our environment? Let's just make the whole thing worse.
And that's for students too. I mean, they'll bring their own, I guess, some of them. But anyway, so not only that, what about The CD, California Department of Ed said you also have to have appropriate cleaning and sanitizing projects for products for classrooms, and no touch trash cans, hand sanitizer, washing stations. Then what are you going to do?
Well, we have no touch trash cans. They're just open.
That's
true. Yeah.
Oh, I'm getting all fancy.
I'm thinking, that one's done.
I'm thinking of like wave your hand over and, you know. Okay. But sure, then
that's what you have at your house.
No, I don't actually.
Oh, I thought you did.
No.
Well, the school, we just have a big barrels and you just.
That's right. I have one that has a lid on it and you're supposed to be able to step on it and then the lid opens.
Oh, but that's what I'm thinking.
I think within the first week I had it, one of my lovely boys broke it. So mm-hmm. now we just pick it up with our hand and throw it in. So it's totally not COVID proof. They also said, what are we going to do? They also set out, a plan for, we have to have a plan for what happens when somebody tests positive for COVID. So.
Yeah. And then we go, back on freaking distance learning again. It's ridiculous.
Right. So,
you know, I got a kid in my class that tested positive. So learning is completely interrupted for the rest of those kids. Cause now, you know, right. They're going to be testing them. Somebody else pops up positive. Somebody else pops up positive. Okay. Back to distance learning.
Yeah.
It's like, do that in the first freaking place.
Well, that's the whole thing too. Cause if somebody tests positive in your classroom now is a danger zone. Nobody can use that classroom till it's been sanitized again. So you're right, Jen.
Well, and then everyone that kid came in contact with this quarantine, like, so you're going to go from this kid and contact trace everywhere that this kid was, you know, holy crap, who has that kind of freaking time?
Well, that's why they're spending $5 billion on administration.
Jesus. Too bad.
It's going to be a new job.
Oh, man.
It's crazy. Not only that, the California Department of Ed says that they recommend limiting access to campus, right? So you're going to have to monitor. Who's doing this? Who's going to monitor staff and students throughout the day for signs of illness? Is that my job? Like, uh-oh, Johnny, you look like you're a little warm.
Yeah, now I'm a freaking nurse, too?
We don't even have a nurse. We don't even have a nurse.
Yeah.
We have a district nurse who has coming schools. I think. Like, are we going to actually get a nurse?
I think isn't our.
I mean, we're lucky. Our health tech is an LVN. I think, right?
Yes.
So then you're going to have to engage in symptom screening as students enter campus. This was the other thing I was thinking of, and on buses, right? So you have to do a visual wellness check as students enter, and you have to temperature check them with the no-touch thermometers, right? Mm-hmm. And make sure they have to be below 100.4. And you have to ask them, have you have a cough? Are you sneezing? Can you taste and smell? And they have to ask if anybody in their house has that. Are we going to do that every time they walk onto campus?
You have to.
And, you know, so what time do we get to start class?
I mean, and here's a total whole nother thing. So there's no way if we go back to school that it's going to be full time, right? They've already told us that they're looking at, you know, different possibilities and those possibilities all incorporate not being at school full time, possibly seeing a group in the morning and a group in the afternoon. Think about that. What are you really going to be teaching in class? No. Are you really going to be teaching in class? No, you're not. You're going to be preparing them, getting them ready for all the shit distance learning that they're going to be doing at home. You're not going to be doing full blown lessons in class while you're in there anyway. You're gonna make sure they're set up for the rest of the fucking week. It's like fucking stupid. So it's just it's so ridiculous on so many levels. I mean, you're seeing the kids, you're in front of them, but you're not getting any teaching done because you got to get them prepared for all the distance learning they're going to be doing until the next time you see them a week or, you know, whenever later.
How much actual learning are they doing? Don't forget there's passing period. Don't forget there's recess. Don't forget there's lunch. Don't forget there's, you know, time to do and explore other things. You can't possibly expect so-called teaching face-to-face to incorporate the entire school day. It doesn't happen that way, and you can't expect that to happen when kids are at home.
And they don't, because what happened is they lowered the number of minutes required per grade level. So I don't have those numbers in front of me, but they're not significantly lower.
Yeah, but he's saying that is a disservice because you know, now you're lowering the bar for these kids. I'm not sure you're actually lowering the bar when you do that, when you incorporate all those other, you know, transition times and stuff that you have to incorporate into your class time. You have to have time for a kid to go from one activity to another. When you're doing an online lesson, you've got your activity. Their transition time whenever they want.
Yeah. You know, this is anybody out there who's going to be working on their PhD, you might want to start right now and use all of these kids and do like a long-term study on how it affects them from now on through graduation. Because I think it's going to be really interesting to see what this next 2 years, how this is going to affect students in the long run, right? So, we hope. We just have to hope that people will use the vaccine. Right.
Got that majority. You know, you won't have like the hospital down the street overtaking their, you know, cath lab and making an ICU unit and putting up tents in the parking lot to serve people.
Right.
You know, you guys, that's like 2 miles from my house. It sucks.
God. You know, you were talking about all the different transitions that kids have, you know, and then of course the another requirement with suggestions from the Department of Ed is that they have to wash their hands when they arrive and when they leave their homes, when they arrive at and leave school, when they play outside, after having close contact with others, after using shared surfaces or tools, before and after using the restroom, after blowing their nose, coughing and sneezing, and before and after eating and preparing foods. I thought just the coughing and sneezing alone is going to take up the entire period.
Here it is.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Can I
gotta go wash my
tissue, please? And then they're like this, wiping it down. And then they're shirts and everything.
You know what they're going to do, don't you?
Your high kids. Can you
yeah, they're going to cough seven? And sneeze on purpose, so they have to go wash their hands.
Not only that, they're just going to pull their mask down and sneeze and then put their mask back up because nobody wants to sneeze inside that thing.
So
I've seen adults do that.
So how much teaching are we going to, time do we have in the classroom? I think this is ridiculous. I think we should just, why are they waiting to make a decision? Make your decision now. Go ahead and tell everybody's at home. Now you're giving teachers, 4 to 8 weeks, depending on when your school starts in California, to get your shit together.
Yeah.
Just bite the bullet and say, we're not doing it here. You guys, go make it better.
Yeah.
We'll make it better.
I don't know how it's going to work. It doesn't seem like anybody really asked teachers about it. I thought it was interesting. Our principal was talking this morning.
Yeah, this is good. Listen to this, Sharon. You'll like
go
this.
Go ahead and tell him, Jen, what you said.
No, well,
about what the principal at the high school was saying.
Our principal was talking to the principal at the high school, and they were having a conversation. Should go back, should not go back. And their principal said, if something happens to one of the kids or one of the students, can I honestly say that I did everything? How did she word it? Everything in my
ability. Was everything in my
ability to prevent that from happening? And that person said, absolutely not. I can't say that.
Right. You can't.
The only thing you can do to absolutely prevent that from happening is distance learning. So
at least in that way,
that person.
It won't, you know, there's no, you know what's going to happen. It's going to happen where somebody is going to bring COVID into the school. It's going to
somebody's
going to
come the first day with COVID.
Yeah, it's going, there's
statistics and it's going to be multiple people.
Yeah, there's just no way that you can, there is absolutely 100% no way you can come back safely. Mm-mm. So I don't
know.
Get it. People are really saying that COVID is as dangerous and as something we should really be worried about, then how can they possibly say that this is a good idea?
Well, it's not going to be, especially once you start throwing in that regular flu with it. Here's the other thing that I think, right? When we lose people, right, students, and they don't come back, and then they have to adjust. Now we're going to lose teachers, and then they're going to rearrange classes again.
No.
Think about it.
Oh, God.
Think about it.
And on that lovely note, let's take a little break here. We'll come back and talk about what we think we should be doing. All right. Welcome back. So, when we left, we were talking about the issues that need to be considered when returning to classes in the fall. So, with that in mind, what do you guys think schools need to do that is in the best interest of everyone involved? Sharon?
We need to not go back. It's just not safe. I really don't think it's safe. And think about litigation. So let's say that kid does lie and say, I feel fine and blah, 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 right? And comes to school and blah, 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 whatever, and doesn't have a fever until they leave. Are we taking temperatures when they leave?
Yeah,
we're only taking temperatures when they come.
You know, yeah.
They're going to have to install like thermal devices in the doorways so that they register with like a siren when they walk through. What happens after PE? After PE, they're all going
to
be hot.
Well, and then the kids, just like you said, Sharon, the kids that lie about it, when we do go back to school, they're all going to lie about it because they want to be back. They want to see their friends. They want to hang out. Of course they're going to lie about it.
Yeah, I'm good.
Why are you sweating profusely? It's cold in here. Oh, I'm fine.
right. And then, okay. So now, let's say a teacher gets sick. Right. Let's say the teacher gets it. Well,
then you got to call in a sub.
Who's going to take over for them? Who is going to take over for them? Like, so if you think about like, okay, what are you going to do about subs? What are you going to do about subs? People aren't going to be able to go to work every day. What are you going to do about subs? That's like how COVID has spread through a lot of elderly healthcare centers because they don't employ those people full time and they work at multiple sites. And now you're getting it transferred with all of these people. So what about subs? Are subs going to be at one site? Are they going to be at, you know, how is that going to work?
I get the feeling that this is going to be like a, this is what we're going to do, and then we'll figure it out.
Yeah,
as we
of course, that's what they're going to do because they want everybody to go back, right? Because like you said before, Anne, a lot of the economy depends on schools being open, so people can go back to work. Okay, so let's go back to, remember we talked about this before. You know, everybody's appreciating teachers right now. You know, oh my gosh, I'm at home with my kid. Look at, you know, when we go back, the teachers should be able to put anything they want on their wish list. How about on my wish list is, don't send me back. How about my wish list is, can you just wait till it's all over? Because what about you guys who have immunosuppressed people at home? What if
I wonder though, Sharon, like when the CD, California Department of Ed was putting this all together, how many teachers were on that committee that said, these are the things you have to have in place in order to go back, quote unquote, safely?
I don't think they've been asking us. I haven't gotten any emails about that. Although we when we got the one from the NEA, did you get that one from the NEA about how you would feel about going back and everything? They asked about like student engagement and stuff. They never asked the question, is your student engagement more or less than in the classroom? They just asked what it was.
Yeah.
Right? So, I mean, if you're looking at 70% student engagement, that's about the same as in the classroom. That's cool.
You know, and it's the same kids that don't participate in school that didn't participate online.
You know what else, though, I think, too, Sharon, to that point is we went to distance learning in the middle of the school year.
Mm-hmm.
If you start the school year that way, you can set expectations right off the bat.
Yeah.
You know, and the whole thing with assignments and not holding kids responsible and not giving out grades, that I think contributed to a fact that a lot of kids were just like, forget this, or it was very hard, or but if you start at the beginning of the school year and it is the way the school year is, then I think it would make a huge difference in compliance and working through it as well.
And it will help also because we're not going to go back for a week and then get kicked out because then we're going to have the same problem.
That you're right. And to me, I think that is the biggest argument why we should not go back is that we go back and then the curve goes up. Or some a bunch of kids at our school or teachers test positive, and all of a sudden we got to close down all these classrooms, and then all of a sudden it's not, and then we're all home.
Yeah.
So, and then we're back to where we were at the beginning of or at the end of last year. All of a sudden we're back distance learning.
Yeah, mm-hmm. It's crisis mode again. Instead of okay, you know what? You told me in the beginning of July that we're not going back. I get it. You don't. You're not required to work over the summer, but you know we do. Right. So mm-hmm. You're giving me all of that
I
time.
To plan. Yeah.
Yeah. That I can go, okay, let me think about, you know, how I want to do it. And Angela, I've already been talking about this, like how we want to plan things. And if you give us the time, we can make it really good. You know, if you're going to throw us back into, you're coming back to work. And now a month in, oh, sorry, got to go back on distance learning. Well, now we've already laid everything out the way, you know, that's going to be like, what do you want to do? Do you want us to do double duty again? Like fuck that shit, man. Mm-hmm.
Sharon, in our research document, you included something from a Facebook post and it was like a wish list that a teacher said. I thought that was really really awesome. Do you know who said that so we could give them credit? Because I think that was such a, it's so right on. This person really did some thinking about what teachers need to do. And a lot of it is what you were saying about telling teachers that they have the, you know, they don't have to go back to work and put their lives in danger. Some people aren't as concerned about it as others. And some people don't have health issues as others. So I just thought that was.
Yeah. And I get that because, and that again, it's like, where are you coming from? Because not every family has elderly people in the home. Not everybody has, you know, immunosuppressed people in the home, people with underlying health conditions. But you guys, we're in like suburban Southern California. A lot of our kids have asthma. A lot of our kids have asthma is a huge contributor to, you know, having additional problems with COVID. Okay, so going back to her name, quote, I'm going to say her name wrong. I'm really sorry. Karen Sweeney Garreau. I'm not really sure if that's how she said it.
Go ahead and read what she said, because I think it's really.
Yeah, I'm just going to read the whole thing. So she says, teachers and school staff are not discussed in regarding reopening plans. If you want to reopen safely, this needs to change. And then she says, for the record, I don't think it's possible to reopen public school safety. I think we agree
on that. We totally agree.
Right.
Hands up.
So over the last decade, we've seen public school teachers throw themselves between shooters and their students. We've seen teachers physically cover children with their bodies as tornadoes rip apart the building we were in. Remember those funny memes from 3 months ago, the ones about the teachers deserving huge raises or how they should put anything they want on their wish list this year because now you appreciate them? For a lot of teachers, this is their wish list. Give us a choice about whether or not we want to risk our own lives when you open school. Don't make us choose between having a job or endangering the lives of our high-risk loved ones who live with us. Asking someone to stop visiting their mother in long-term care facility is asking a lot. Can we acknowledge this, please? Give us a choice as to whether or not we are prepared to self-isolate from our parents and others at risk for the entire school year. Tell high-risk teachers now that they will not be required to teach in August. You have diabetic teachers, teachers recovering from cancer, teachers with COPD, waiting to see if, in just 4 weeks' time, they will have to choose between their lives and their jobs. Insist that administrators and politicians start being explicit about how they're addressing employee health and working conditions. Here are a few problems that need to be addressed, and I'm sure there are more. will people have to be 100% asymptomatic to work on any given day? To the point where if someone has a cough or trouble breathing that they need to stay home? Or are some symptoms acceptable? Which ones are they? Will teachers have unlimited sick days?
Oh God, that's crazy. Oh my God, I didn't even think about that.
They'd have to in order to follow the safety mandate. Where is the pool of substitute teachers coming from? There has been a sub shortage for years.
Oh my gosh. Jesus.
Right? Will subs have to commit to one specific school in order to minimize contact circles? Will classes have to double up if there aren't enough subs? If you do
send
allow
the kids home. Right. If your teacher's not here today, you have to go home.
Yeah. If you call like snow days. If you do allow teachers to choose between teaching in person or online from home, and she has in parentheses, as you should, will they have to certify why they request online? Will a low-risk teacher be allowed to work from home due to high-risk family members? Will school district employees get hazard pay? No, of course not. Even though they should. But given the strict cleaning requirements associated with opening, will staff be compensated for the additional duties? Will they be provided supplies? Will they be paid bonuses for having to replan lessons? Many teachers have been project-based, hands-on teachers for years. With no shared materials and no small groups, their lesson plans won't work. They'll need more planning time. Instead, they get less. This and an almost $1 billion budget cut. I don't know where she is. We've got a $10 billion budget cut, right? Do more or less again. And then she says, I have a whole other essay with the impact on kids. Don't think I'm ignoring them. But the only mention I've seen of teachers is in a teachers group. And this conversation needs to get a broader audience immediately. We're only a month from opening date.
There you go, Karen. Here's your broader audience given to you on our podcast. And it's so many important things there. So many important things she says.
Awesome.
You know, I didn't even consider the fact that you only get a certain amount. Some people don't have any sick days left. They're only going to get 10.
Okay, I got to tell you, this is the first year that we've ended the school year. I just looked at my statement and I actually have one day left. Ever since I had my first job 16 years ago, I've had no sick days any year at the end of the year because you have to take when your kid's sick. You have to take them when you're sick. I got two kids. I'm the other person.
You know, that's so when your kids get COVID, then you're home with them, you know, and then you can't come back. Oh God. There's just so many unknowns. I can't even picture what it's going to be like. Are there any school districts that have gone back yet? I mean, I know there are some countries where they've opened up schools and they're going back to school. I'd be really curious to see how that goes.
The last one that I heard is France went back was that last month and they closed again.
Oh, really?
Oh, that's true. I did hear that. Yeah, they started and whoops, didn't work. That's exactly what's going to happen. Plus the fact that other countries have handled the disease way better than the United States has.
Right.
And so maybe they're in a better position to even consider that than we are here. But with cases up on the rise, oh, Lord. Anyway, I don't know that there's any answer to this issue. I just can't believe that a district is going to say, yep, we're opening up campuses. Let's go back. We heard our principal say today that they're concerned with the fact that kids really need to be on a schedule and they really need their social, you know, this is good for their social emotional well-being and for learning in general. But is the risk too big? Is the price to pay for that too big? And on that note.
Well, I think we start at 8 o'clock with our 12-year-olds. How about we just shift school to start at 10, okay? And we just work that way because if they're home, they don't want to get up.
Well, that was one of the things that was most successful for me with distance learning when we ended our school year last year is I didn't keep office hours. I wasn't like, okay, if you have a question, it has to be between, you know, 8 and 2:30 school hours. I didn't do that. You know, my kids were on the Remind app text me whenever, you know, and I'll answer you, because, you know, the majority of my kids are doing work late at night because they're sleeping in, you know, and they're up late at night, and that's when they're getting their work done. And that's what a lot of them, you know, because I talked to a lot of them, and they, you know, oh yeah, what'd you like about distance learning? What didn't you like? They like the fact that they're on their own schedule. And some of my kids that, you know, were doing terrible in the actual classroom, they flourished. You know what I mean? Because they're on their own schedule. They're working at their own pace
and
on their own time.
And they don't have distractions of those kids in class that are, you know, bullying them or being rude or taking up your time because they threw up.
Oh, God. I'm not trying to think about that.
There are definitely some pros then to distance learning.
And there's definitely some cons too. Some kids need to be in the classroom in front of a teacher. Yeah, I get it for sure. But not if it's going to compromise their health.
You know, or
possibly,
mine.
Yeah.
Or my family's.
Exactly.
So, and then it was really interesting too, because in that one staff meeting they had for the entire district, anybody could listen in, people were really trying to get them nailed down onto whether or not people are going to have a choice to stay home or be in the classroom. And they were really reticent about making a definitive statement on that. So I really got the impression that the answer is no, you don't get a choice.
Yeah.
That's the feeling I got from that anyway.
That was my impression as well. And that's going to make it hard. I mean, look at the women we have on our campus that are in chemo right now.
Oh, yeah, quite a few.
Right?
Yeah, we do.
Like, what? Are we going to make them all come back?
There's going to have to be a priority listing. Like, there are people who have certain priorities are going to have to be offered it first, I think, is what they'll have to do. Oh, what are we going to do about earthquake drills, fire drills? Now what? Are those going to be required during COVID?
Yeah.
Does that mean we don't have to active shooter drills? Yes.
or assemblies, or there will be no assemblies?
Yeah, there won't be any of that. Be none of that.
Yeah. So many things that, you know, I just...
You can't even let your kids work in groups, you know?
That's going to be so hard.
Well, if you can't let the kids work in groups, then what's the point of coming back?
And they can't share any supplies, and they can't be within 6 feet of each other.
They're going to have to carry their Chromebook with them from class to class. You know, I thought I had a really good solution for how this would work. I presented it to told you guys.
I know it was good.
It is good. Tell us.
Bubble system, which these were the recommended ones from the California Department of Ed, and I just kind of combined two of them. So the first one was the bubble system, where the kids stay in one class and the teachers rotate. And that way you have them using the same desk, the same materials all day long. Nobody's changing things out or not having to worry about who touched it, what, when. And also if the kid gets sick, or somebody's sick, you know exactly who they've been in contact with that in that cohort, right? So the second part of this plan is you divide the school into two cohorts. The first cohort, the kids come to school Monday through Thursday, and they stay in the one class. They stay in one classroom the entire day. Then on Friday, everybody's at home, distance learning, and teachers have the opportunity to do planning with their teams or whatever. And then on the following Monday, the second cohort comes to school and starts their lesson in their bubble classroom, while cohort one is now off for 10 days. So they stay home for 10 days, right? Friday, Saturday, Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, through the following Monday is 10 days. Which means that if they're going to come down with COVID or begin having symptoms of COVID, it will show up while they're at home.
Mm-hmm.
And that will prevent them from coming back to school.
I loved it.
Yeah, if you're making us come back, this is the safest way if you're making us come back.
It would be so easy to contact trace. You would know exactly who the kids were in contact with, who had been with them. It would be much easier to contact parents, because you're going to have to contact every single parent in that classroom to say, so-and-so is tested positive, your child's in that classroom, you need to blah, blah, blah. But the the pushback I heard was, well, what's going to happen when the kids are alone in the classroom and the teachers are changing classes? They're going to go crazy and be out of control. I don't know that that's necessarily true, you know, depending on how you teach kids to begin with, you know.
Well, if we had cores and we were all next to each other again, it wouldn't take much, especially if we had a teacher's aide. You have one teacher's aide that rotated and watched while people moved.
That could be. And the other pushback was that the high school felt it was ridiculous to even for them to even try that. And my response to that was why do we have to do what the high school does?
Yeah, why?
We're completely different setting.
It should be site specific.
Yeah, that's what I thought too. But they shot me down, said, no, that's not happening. But I thought that made sense.
It does. It totally makes sense. If we have to go back, like that 10 days versus 4 days, like you want to compare that to having kids come AM and PM?
Yeah, you can't. You're never going to be able to tell who touched what, who was where.
Talk about spreading disease AM to PM.
To conclude this whole thing, you guys, I think the only rational solution, in my opinion, is that we don't go back to class. Or if we do, that we use the Ann model of, you know, whatever you want to call it.
That
we incorporate something like that.
We're
going to
put you in a carton A or carton B model.
Yeah, your cohort A or cohort B, I don't know. But I don't see how, I don't know. I'm frustrated. Can you tell?
I'm frustrated.
I mean,
are you frustrated, Jen?
I'm not knowing is frustrating, and I agree with Sharon. They should just, you know what? Call it a day, man. Just let this thing play itself out. Leave people at home where they're safe. You know, I think our district is setting themselves up for lawsuits by going back to school, for sure.
Yes.
For sure, for
totally.
Sure.
Are you listening, parents?
Yeah, because what happens when the kid gets sick and then another kid gets sick and then someone in that family dies and they sue the school district because you didn't keep my kid safe?
Yeah, whose negligence was it? Is it the teacher's negligence? You know, did they not make the kid sit far enough away from another kid? Is it the school's negligence? Was it, you know, not sanitary? It's like there's so many different, you know, worms coming out of that can. It's like, fuck, keep the can closed.
Yeah.
That's it. Keep it closed.
That's it right there.
That's it. We're going to have to, we're closing the can.
Close the can.
We want the worms in the can, district.
Yep.
Keep us safe. No
keep
worms.
Keep the worms at home.
Oh, you guys.
Go back to the same can next year if they want to.
Yeah.
We're going to, I don't know. Well, I don't know. Hopefully people got something useful out of this. If not anything, sometimes it's nice to hear other people expressing the same opinions you have, so you can go, I'm not alone out there with my ideas, you know. But if you found this podcast interesting, I do hope you will go and rate and write a review. We really need you guys to go write an actual review in Apple iTunes. It helps us so much push out our message to other people. And if you also please go to our website, www.transparencyinteaching.com, and leave us a comment. Let us know what you think about this. Do you think we should go back to school? What's your opinion? Is it a good idea? What's bad? Join our conversation with us.
I'd love to hear from some parents that absolutely want school to reopen. I'd love to hear their justification.
Reasons why.
Yeah, please.
Please go and submit your opinions on that. I will also leave a link in the show notes where you can leave a voice comment if you don't feel like typing, if you want to really rant so we can hear your rage in your voice. You can do that as well. But please join us and help us figure out what's going on. We won't know. We're supposed to be told at the end of this month.
Yeah, not to the end
of
July.
July 28th.
Which is going to give us a lovely, it's going to give us a lovely D-day. 3 weeks. 3 weeks to plan for this.
That's
stupid.
My kid's birthday.
All right. Well, I'm sorry. I'm sorry that's his birthday.
I know.
Their birthday. Oh my gosh. Anyway, I got to get up. We got to stop this because it's just going to, we can go on about this forever. So until we meet again, stay safe And please let your school districts know how you feel, because I think if enough people push back or maybe say something, it might make districts have another thought about what they want to do come the fall. So please contact your school districts, contact your principals, contact your state representatives, let them know how you feel about your children attending public school and how you think it should be done.
And teachers, get out there and make your voice heard too, because they should hear our concerns as well. And maybe you don't have concerns.
I do. No, I doubt there's a teacher out there that doesn't.
Yeah, I don't know. There's got, I don't know.
All right. Let's get out of this. I'll talk to you guys later.
Yeah, okay. We're out.
Bye. Don't forget, leave us comments. Bye, guys.
Bye.
Just a quick update. We recorded this podcast before the American Academy of Pediatrics released its very strong recommendation that all students return to school this fall. The AAP feels that the harm that comes from students remaining at home far outweighs any risk of returning to campuses. They are concerned with the rise in depression, child abuse, food insecurity, and the huge loss in learning that school closures have caused in children. And the fact that these issues disproportionately affect children of color and low-income families more. They claim that evidence now supports that children who largely remain asymptomatic are not the super spreaders of the virus that they were once thought to be. The AAP feels that if precautions such as social distancing and mask wearing are implemented, the risk of others contracting the disease is very minimal. The White House is also pushing for schools to reopen, with President Trump suggesting that withholding of federal funds will be an incentive to pressure districts to open. The president suggested that the idea of keeping schools closed is a Democratic ploy to sway the election in November. Secretary of Education Betsy DeVos also echoed the president's demands, saying that only a full reopening of schools is the best way to serve students and taxpayers. Immigration and Customs Enforcement, otherwise known as ICE, has moved to revoke the student visas of any university student who is not enrolled in at least one on-campus course. According to the LA Times, over 1 million study visas were issued last year. Obviously, this back-to-school issue is far from over, and we're likely to see more issues and controversies arise as the situation continues to develop. I can't wait until we can say, "Remember back when the whole world was thrown into a panic by a microscopic organism?" Well, the good news is that eventually, somewhere out there in the not-too-distant future, we will be able to say that.